Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian. He's on vacation. This summer, we've been taking a closer look at New York City's public housing developments, which have so many residents, over 400,000. They're like a city unto themselves. And in fact, if they were a separate city, they'd be the 12th largest in the country. Today, we're going to listen to the residents. We've invited tenants from public housing developments in three boroughs to join us, and we'd like to hear from you. If you're a current or former public housing resident and would like to weigh in on the big issues, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Joining me in the studio are Reggie Bowman of the Seth Lowe Houses in Brooklyn, Corinne Haynes, a resident of the Queensboro Houses in Long Island City, and Agnes Rivera, who lives in Wagner Houses in Manhattan. Thank you all for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with each of you telling us a little bit about where you live and how long you've been there. And we'll start with you, Agnes.
Well, I've lived in Wagner Housing now for 17 years. And I came there as a survivor of domestic violence.
You were not in public housing before
that? No, I was not.
That. And mm-hmm. So you're now there in East Harlem. How long have you been there?
17 years. Going on 18.
Ms. Haynes.
Yes.
You're in Queensbridge.
Yes.
How long have you been there?
I've been there for 46 years.
Which I'd say is all your life?
Yes.
Okay. And Reggie Bowman?
I've been a resident of Seth Lowe Houses for more than 20 years, and I'm also the president of its association and its council and the district council, and I'm the acting chairperson for the Housing Authority's Council of Presidents. So I've been in the housing developments for more than 25 years, actually.
Yeah, I should mention that all of you are active in community organizations that deal with public housing issues directly or indirectly. Well, what are the big issues? We'll start with you, Reggie. What are the big issues for residents these days?
Well, the big issues for residents these days are what's happening with the budget. The Housing Authority has been cut by the federal, state, and city government, and the second biggest issue, I think, is the effect that these budget cuts have had on the residents of public housing. The residents of public housing have to do without many of the normal services that are supposed to be kept up, maintenance, repairs, social services and community services have all been cut. And I believe that because of these cuts, there's been a fundamental decline in the quality of life in our complexes. And I think that those are the real biggest issues right now. What are we going to do about maintenance? What are we going to do about repairs? What are we going to do about education and social services?
Ms. Haynes,
yes.
What are the issues in Queensbridge?
Some of the issues are maintenance, the quality of the maintenance, not maintenance in general, but the quality of the maintenance. And we have some issues in reference to resources that are provided or not provided for the community.
And so when you go to the Housing Authority and ask for better maintenance or better services, what kind of a response are you getting these days?
The response is fairly well. I personally haven't had any major issues with maintenance. They're just general. When you need a repair, you request the repair. They have a new system now, and it's done by appointment. So that seems to be working better than the random ticket that you put in. Now you do by appointment only. So it seems to be working pretty good for me.
Now, Agnes, the building that you walked us through, you brought a bunch of reporters, and we walked through your building. And you showed me tickets for a woman's apartment, one of your neighbors, that went back 3 or 4 years.
Yes, that's right.
Is that typical?
Yes, that is. That is very typical of what's going on in NYCHA right now. Right now with the budget, the way it's going, it's not just going to affect the people that live in housing. It's also affecting the people that are working in housing that live in housing, because a lot of their jobs are going to be disposed of. They're going to get fired or laid off, and that's 500 people we're talking about. And their goal is 2,000 to be laid off so that they can meet up with their budget crisis that they're having. The lady that we went, which was Sarah Rodriguez, she actually had tickets since the year 2004, and nothing had been done. She was living in what we were calling a plastic bag kind of bathroom setting. I mean, you saw it yourself. And
there's holes in the wall, and you got plastic bags to keep the water from seeping into the...
Right, and that housing put it up itself. She didn't do that. They did that.
Oh, that was their maintenance?
That was their maintenance. That was their repair.
We're taking calls. We especially want to hear from residents of public housing. If you live in, you know, Park Hill, Eleanor Roosevelt, Soundview, Coney Island, give us a call. 212-433-9692. That is 433-WNYC. Now, Reggie, you led a group of tenant leaders to Washington not that long ago. Mm-hmm. To talk about the funding issues. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Well, back in this plan to mobilize politically in public housing started in 2006, where we began to ally ourselves with the organizations of Community Services Society, Good Old Lower East Side, Community Voices Heard, Public Housing Residents Alliance, because we understand and we still understand now how important it is to get the powers that be in the political arena to start listening to us and to start giving us our equitable share of the federal, state, and city budget. So when we went to Albany first in March and the people saw the orange hats and we really lobbied the governor for the budget to be expanded for the 21,000 state units that are not funded by the state, and to also get the shelter allowance thing passed, we then decided to go to Washington, D.C., which we did in May. Our whole effort at that time was to make sure that the federal officials, and we were glad that the New York State Congressional delegation signed a letter to support us, and Nydia Velazquez and Chuck Schumer put a bill in to increase the public housing subsidies. We wanted to make sure that we mobilized residents politically, because residents have to understand that a population of 400,000 people, we have enormous political power, and we wanted the federal government to feel it. And I believe that by us mobilizing and going to Washington and going to Albany, we were able to finally come out of the margins and show people that what we need as far as money and resources are concerned have to be put up higher on the agenda. So we did go to Washington. We had the support of the New York City Housing Authority as far as being partners with us, and the organizations that I did mention and the elected officials also chimed in. And I think we were able to change the course of the perception of public housing residents and also the image of what is going on in public housing today and why we need more money.
Agnes, when tenants organize and get together, have you noticed at the local level that it makes a difference? What kind of changes have you been able to get over at Wagner?
Well, it's really hard to get a lot of the tenants to come out because of the fear that they still have, whether they're going to get sanctioned by housing itself, mm-hmm. Are they going to be a subject or so. I'm not caring about that at this moment because that's not what it's all about. We need to get more numbers up. We need to get more people out. They mm-hmm. need to start realizing that this is not a game any longer. This is our homes that we're trying to save. Actually, the way I was canvassed was because of Community Voices Heard that went door knocking, and I became a member and a leader there, and now I do the door knocking and inform people, and that's what we all need to do throughout the five boroughs. Mm-hmm. We need to go door knocking, letting people know what the issues are, and it's not a phony idea, because a lot of the people we knock doors on, they say, oh, they keep saying that, but they're not seeing the true picture of what's going on.
When you talk about sanctions, what do you mean by that? What kind of...
We get picked on. Like, for example, I myself had to do a repair in my bathroom, and I made numerous calls. They came, they took out the shower part, And I had no water, no way to get a shower or anything. And they kept telling me and putting me off, putting me off, putting me off. And luckily that we have council people that are effectively listening. Right now, I can speak about is Rosie Mendez, who is the chairperson for housing. She is a very effective listener. She's on the Lower East Side City Council, and people need to come aboard there. Also here, we have Melissa Mark-Viverito, my city councilwoman, and she's been very supportive. I believe a lot of our city council members need to become more effective with their people within their communities because they do elect them.
And now, just to be clear, in a lot of cases, what you're looking for, or what you're calling for, is not necessarily antagonistic towards NYCHA, but you're actually on the same page with them, trying to get more resources for the agency as a whole.
Exactly.
So why would they express any hostility towards you if that's where you're coming from?
Because a lot of them are not seeing the bigger view, so some of them can be very, very nasty with people. And some of them can be very nice, and it's the way you come across and the way they come across. So what we need to have is a dialogue, an appropriate and proper dialogue with the residents. I may live in Wagner Housing, and I am living in Wagner Housing, but it doesn't mean I'm any less than anybody else because I live there. And that's the kind of sanctions we got from the community, other people that look at people that are in housing that think that people that are living there who are low income or low class or have no kind of class. Well, Rosie Mendez came out of NYCHA, and look at where she's at now. And they're my grandkids. They're going to college. I'm very proud of them. And it's given me a chance so that they can go and further themselves. So just because I live there doesn't mean don't stigmatize me for it.
Oh yeah, well, no, we can dispel that right away. In fact, Corinne, mm-hmm. you have kids in college as
yes,
well.
Yes, I do have. My oldest son is in college. He goes to Lincoln University. He's in his third year, and I have another son who's finished high school, and he's in he's actually in the New York City Housing Construction Skills Program. He's just completed that. Waiting for his apprenticeship for union.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News and a former resident of Manhattanville Houses, while we're at it. I'm sitting in for Brian Lehrer. He's on vacation. We are talking with Reggie Bowman of the Seth Lowe Houses in Brooklyn. We're talking with Corinne Haynes, a resident of Queensbridge in Queens, and Agnes Rivera of the Wagner Houses in East Harlem. And we're taking calls from residents of public housing at 433-9692. That's 212-433-9692. WNYC. Patrick from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to ask the panel how they're feeling about crime in the projects these days as compared to 5 or 10 even years ago, and if they're receiving the attention from the police department that they want and need, or if it's maybe too much attention or not enough.
Well, let me ask you first, Patrick. Where do you live in Brooklyn?
Lafayette Houses on DeKalb.
Now, that's across the street from the 88th Precinct. What do you see happening over there?
Well, now, that's not our precinct.
I understand.
That's unfortunately that street that you have to cross to get to it. They are more toward the north, toward the south, mm-hmm. toward Fort Greene and deeper into Clinton Hill, not this way into Bed-Stuy.
Is there a crime problem at Lafayette Gardens?
There's a good 30 or 40 men, young men, on the corners, in some colors, but that's about all I'm comfortable saying. I'm just wondering if there is still gang violence elsewhere and if it's being responded to in appropriately enough to satisfy those who've been in these projects much longer than I have.
Okay, thank
you
for
the call. I'd like to respond to that. I think that the violence in the public housing residents and communities around the city of New York are about proportionate to the amount of crime that exists in the city of New York, and mm-hmm. in some cases even less. Let's face it, there has been an upswing in violence in the city of New York in general as far as gun violence is concerned, and robberies and a lot of other things. Do we have gangs in our public housing community? Yes, we do. Are there initiatives that are being taken as far as law enforcement is concerned to confront this? Yes, there is. I'm not defending gangs, and I'm not saying that law enforcement's agenda is perfect, but I really would like to dispel the myth that public housing is a breeding ground for crime. A lot of people always focus on some of the problems that we face as far as our young men and young women who may or may not be involved in these types of activities. However, you have to also take into account that because there were less summer programs with no funding, a lot of our young people are suffering from the lack of funding in the city across the board to create the kind of alternatives that would get rid of this. So to answer your question, yes, there are some problems with criminal elements in our local public housing communities. And in mine and Cephalo houses, we have some issues, and I think we have issues in speaking for my region that I represent. We have issues across the board. But I think that right now they're doing all they can in law enforcement to confront these things. And I think that as residents, we need to form partnerships with law enforcement, stop being afraid, and work with law enforcement and other agencies to help to combat that problem.
Okay, we're going to pick up that subject in just a minute. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. The subject is New York City public housing. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking with residents of public housing, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. Joining me in the studio are Reggie Bowman of the Seth Lowe Houses in Brooklyn, who's also the acting president of the Citywide Tenant Presidents Association. Corinne Haynes is from Queensbridge, and Agnes Rivera is from the Wagner Houses in Manhattan. The last call was about crime, and I wanted you, Agnes, and Corinne to also maybe chime in a little bit. What are things like from the standpoint of public safety where you live?
Well, it's surprising to say that we're concerned about what's going on and not going on, but we need to really bring it back, because actually New York City Housing Authority pays the police department $72 million out of their budget. So we should be having better services, and we really are not having those services. And that's something that we need to come back, and everything is on based on the budget. We need to bring the money back focus. The governor needs to reinforce back of putting the budget from both the federal, the state, and the city. They all need to combine, or we need to find other ways and means to support NYCHA, because we're going to have a massive, massive, not just crime, but also homelessness, because if we don't get this funding reinstated into NYCHA, we're going to lose it all. And I think, I believe that if we're paying New York City police officers the $72 million, I think we should get better services. I'm not having that much of a crime thing, but we're not having the same kind of, like when they used to walk the beat in there, and we would know them and we would speak to them. They knew us, they knew our kids, they knew the people in the community, they knew who belonged, who didn't belong. Then we had more effectiveness, and now that we seem to be giving them more money, we have less effectiveness.
Corinne?
I agree with that, and a sense of the relationship between the residents and the police department. There used to be a station house right there in the center of my development, which is no longer exists. And when it was there, there was that relationship. You knew who the officers were by name. They knew the children. They knew the parents. And the level of respect was different for the residents from the officers, and vice versa. And it helps the community to be able to have confidence in the fact that your safety is being provided, and vice versa. I believe that the police department would be able to get a better response from the residents if that did exist. And in my development, the crime is nowhere near what it used to be, but amongst the youth, they are under-facilitated, greatly under-facilitated. There needs to be more resources for the young adults.
Are you saying that the police substation was moved or closed?
It was closed. We used to have one right in the center of our development.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that we need to keep in mind when we look at the big picture, and I agree with the fact that the police department's been subsidized from the Housing Authority budget, and I think listening to this series, it's been pointed out over and over again that there's been substantial investment by the Housing Authority in services that we're not getting,
mm-hmm.
and a rise in crime is something that happens when the resources are not invested in the neighborhood the way that they should be.
Mm-hmm.
I have the converse or the opposite in Brownsville. We are called the impact zone. So the impact zone gets more law enforcement personnel. And in fact, we have a post in our neighborhood, a sub-post of the Public Housing Authority. But the problem that I have is that the New York City Housing Authority's police department was absorbed by the NYPD. There's supposed to be no more divisions between the groups. But the NYPD regular police department doesn't come on public housing grounds,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. And so you have a separate but unequal law enforcement application in a city that's supposed to be one city. And let's face it, those people that may be involved in criminal activity, they know it. So they take advantage of that and they start to flourish in ways that they should not flourish because the law enforcement resources aren't being applied correctly. So I agree with you. It's about the way that the budget is being applied and the way that I believe that public housing community residents have been put on the marginalized perception and put on the back burner, and we're not getting the resources that we're supposed to get.
Jane from Queensbridge. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling to support the person who said that the maintenance services are inadequate. Someone also talked about the garbage. And these are some issues that housing should be able to address without additional resources. For instance, at any given time, in certain areas of Queensbridge, you will find mounds and mounds of garbage on the street. Now, I don't know if it means that the garbage collection should be more frequently, but this is something that should be addressed immediately. There, of course, we need additional resources. The maintenance people, I feel that they do as much as they can possibly do. But I've spoken with some, and they tell me that they use their own money to buy things such as cleaning materials because they're not furnished with this. They're not furnished with an adequate amount. We have rats infestation here. A couple of months ago, New York One came out. They interviewed some of the tenants. So it did bring some attention to us, but the problem still exists. So I'm on board with, we do need more resources, but some of these things that can be addressed are not being addressed.
Okay, thank you for that call, Jane. You wanted to chime in on that, Corinne? That's your development.
Yeah, that's my development. And there is a lack of, I believe it must be the rotation, the garbage pickup itself, and it is causing, I agree with her, it is causing a rodent problem out there. And to piggyback off of what she's saying in reference to maintenance, I believe that NYCHA themselves are understaffed because maintenance cannot handle the magnitude of repairs that they're getting, even by appointment. There's more work than what there are staff.
Yeah, these are the oldest public housing developments in the country. And
one of the largest.
They certainly need upkeep. And Queensbridge, in fact, is the largest in the country.
Yes,
that's partly why I was surprised when you said they closed the substation. Agnes, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, it's funny that we're having that problem because NYCHA actually pays. They have a contract with the sanitation department for $1 million per year for an extra day of
That's
picking
right.
up are garbage.
That's
so
right.
We shouldn't be having none of those problems whatsoever. So we're investing, I'm going to say we because that's our money, to help us out to maintain our housing. So then actually everything that's being paid for, we're not getting it. Now that testifies to it. We're not getting the service that $72 million is going for and another million going for.
We really have to understand in framing the issues of the public housing community, we're the only city within a city that is really supposed to be a part of New York City, and we're paying additional money for services that we're not getting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to agree with my colleague here on the panel, the public at large and the advocate groups and the elected officials who have started to really begin to see the picture of what we're dealing with, we have to understand that we have a fight ahead of us. And part of that fight is to sit down with the elected officials, the mayor, and the people who are responsible at the Public Housing Authority who are dealing with the provision of resources. And we have to have this dialogue and plan to start making sure that these agencies and institutions start giving us the same high quality level of investment of services as they give the rest of the city across the board. And we have to start demanding that collectively and unite around the city around it. The other thing that I think is really very important for us to do as residents and as a community. When you look down the corridors of Manhattan, and we're at Center Street, and you see these high-rise buildings that go up 40 and 50 stories in Manhattan, they do not have the same problems that we have. And compared to most developments, we're low-rise compared to these new co-ops and condominiums that are selling for millions of dollars. The people in the side of the open market that can't afford to live in those kind of settings need the kind of investment from the federal, state, and city government that is going to create a housing trust fund that permanently deals with these issues. Otherwise, if we don't get the resources and we as residents don't collectively fight for them, then they're going to displace us. And then we're going to end up having to be displaced by some of these other plans that I don't think will really work in New York.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. Jennifer from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. So I'm calling with a sort of outside perspective that is a very personal one. And I live in Spanish Harlem. I live near the Carver Project. And my generosity and my sense of affiliation with people in the projects have both been challenged by living in proximity. And I'm having I'm going to present my experience in a personal way because it is very personal. But to me, I am having difficulty listening to people talk about demanding services and saying that they're paying for these services. They're not. They're collecting. They're not paying in. They're collecting. And for me, I am someone who can barely survive. I can barely survive. My student loans are half of my salary and will be till I'm 65. I cannot afford to have children. I cannot afford to have free parking. I cannot afford to have a lawn. And when I hear people talk about having to buy their own cleaning supplies or having to, not picking up their own garbage, I am personally offended by that. And I apologize for the level of anger, but it's honest.
Okay, well, thank you for the honesty. Let me just to clear up some things that were in what you said. Well, first of all, I hope you won't be paying half your salary for student loans until you're 65. Hopefully, the income will go up enough, and maybe the loans will be forgiven. I don't know. But when it comes to some of what else you said, I think they were talking about the caller was talking about NYCHA employees having to dip into their own pocket to get cleaning supplies in order to do their job. And that was a statement, I think, about the underfunding of the agency in general. The other thing, just to be clear, unless you were making, Jennifer, an argument about being net collectors of city services, these residents, the 409,000 residents of public housing pay one-third of their income, whatever that may happen to be, as their rent, and that's really the only fundamental subsidy that you get by living in public housing.
And
is that
only 16% on public assistance?
16%?
Only 16%. That's right.
No, I didn't know
that's actually helpful.
And
for
then
me to know.
And also we also pay high sky rents. We are not in paying like $300 or $400. I myself pay $800.
$800 to live
in NYCHA.
I know there are lots and lots of people who live in public housing for lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Some people like the location, or they become part of a community, which I think was the whole idea in a lot of ways.
That's right.
Let's take a call from David in Harlem. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to say you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I'm really piggybacking off of Miss Jennifer's call there. I have lived here. I live in Harlem on 122nd Street, Lenox, for the last 10 years. Before that, I grew up in Long Island. My experience with people in the projects the last 27 years, all my boys from college and girlfriends in various projects in the city, everything that young lady just said was correct. It's gotten better. But anyway, as I was telling your call screen what they need to do, and as a real estate broker, the land is too valuable. Let all of these folks have their apartments and sell the apartments at market rate, 50% to them, 50% back to the city of New York, and don't allow any more single mothers into these apartments. Send a message to folks that, you know, we need to bring our people in the projects into the business model like everybody else. And enough with this handout stuff. And like she said, only 16%. But I know that about 25 or 30% of the leases in all of the projects in the city are people who hand them over to people who their sons and daughters are working there. They have Lexuses and Benzes.
Okay, I think we get the idea. Half,
all right, thank you.
Half to the tenant, half to the city, 6% to the brokers like David. But this question of privatization does come up from time to time. What do you all think of that?
I think that would be a displacement for a lot of people. That will not be able to afford. And we have to really think about the people that will be displaced. We cannot just be thinking about people that can afford to. And we got to think of those senior citizens, handicapped, where we're going to send them. What are we going to do with them? We can't just displace them because the market rate is wonderful. And by the way, I am a single mother, and I made it through. And I'm not regretting anything in my life with my children, nor did I took a handout from anyone. I supported them, and they have supported me. So there's a really misconception about single parents. I became single because of a domestic violence. If you don't know the situation, don't criticize the woman.
Other comments?
Yeah, I'd like to just point out that I believe that there needs to be a reasonable discussion and plan around what to do forward from here with what's happening in the New York City real estate market. Without a doubt, public housing people are paying the least amount of rent in a market that is now sky high, and the ability to maintain the bricks and mortar has been what a lot of the pundits are talking about, and that we should not have access to this kind of housing at this price, and that somebody's got to pay for it. We need to understand that in this society, your fair share of the federal and state and city subsidies comes from your political power. Residents are a city within a city, and we need as residents to understand that we need to register everybody to vote in the public housing community. And I believe we will be able to change the amount of money that we get from the federal government. And we also need to present a plan so that there can be a partnership between those who need to be dealing with market forces and the people in the communities that, regardless of whether we want to look at it or not, are always not going to be able to afford open market rents. And that population that the city, the state, and the federal government have allowed to cultivate because of the lack of subsidizing and maintaining their level of funds has to be addressed by a collective plan. I believe that the CSS and Goals and Community Voices Heard and other advocates and the elected officials are stepping up to this plate right now, and that this dialogue doesn't need to become a confrontation. It needs to be ongoing so that we can solve the problem.
And we're going to leave it right there. Thank you so much for coming in and joining me. I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. He's on vacation. I've been speaking with Agnes Rivera, Corinne Haynes, and Reggie Bowman about life in New York's public housing. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.